Hello, and welcome to System Mastery, the podcast so nice, we named it System Mastery. Today, we're going to be discussing Wraiththu, a word that is hard to say, which makes it a perfect accompaniment to a game that is hard to swallow. This one is pretty famously a bad idea, and I just plain cannot wait to tell you why. So gird up your flowery loins, because it's time for a deep dive on today's System Mastery. Hey, John, you know, before we get started today, we do have an announcement mastery to go through. And for various reasons, I feel like it's a good idea to do this one first.
Yeah, let's not put this later. Let's do this one early.
Yeah, because I get the distinct impression, sort of a worrying fear in the pit of my stomach, that this is going to be one of those episodes where people are going to mail us later and say, like, guys, I love you, and I tried, but this was too much.
I turned this off after 20 minutes. I could not deal.
Yeah, and I don't want that to happen to the fine people who support our announcement mastery system, which, again, you can go get us to read something for you for the low, low cost of $50. There's a button on our website, systemmasterypodcast.com, called Give Us Some Money. It'll walk you through the process, and we'll read stuff for you. And this week, our message comes from Tessa. And I'll go ahead and read it to you now. I'm sorry, Tess, looks like. Dearest Jeff, John, and all the lovely listeners out there, this is a really, really long shot. Lockdown madness continues, joblessness prevails. So if anyone hearing this has a software engineering / quantum computing / graphical calculi job going, hell, if you just want a mathematician as a pet, please, please go and check out my partner's website at hjmb.co.uk. Once again, hjmb.co.uk.
Yeah, just remember, handjobsmrballs.co.uk.
Yep, that's definitely what it stands for. That's for sure. hjmb.co.uk. They are just winding up their PhD in graphical calculi for quantum computing at Oxford University and are looking for work, ideally in the UK or remote. They also do heart-achingly cute drawings of hedgehogs. Check those out on Instagram at sometimesmyhandswork. I'm not familiar with the Instagram. I'm terrible at the gram.
The Instagram. Get out of here, the Grandpa. Instagram.
Oh, come on. Leave me be. I learned Tumblr and then they took it away. Work, be it maths or hedgehogs, would be much appreciated. Again, hjmb.co.uk.
Handjobs, MrBalls.co.uk.
I'm almost certain it doesn't stand for that.
But you can't be certain it doesn't.
I feel like I could be. Thank you, Hex. You're doing great. Keep going. Jeff and John, your podcasts are a lifeline. We can't thank you enough. Tess. Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep doing them, so don't worry about that lifeline. And I hope that this goes well for you. All right. Well, you know, let's get it. I think we got enough heartfelt out of the way that it's time for us to go dive into the pit of the abyss that is the rest of this episode. So see you on the other side. Okay, let's get started. I'm your host, Jeff, joined as always by the other host, John. I don't know if he's yours or not. I don't like to speak for him in that regard. He's his own man.
It's true. I am no one's host.
Yeah, host to no man, John.
No gods are hosts, only men.
The podcast man with no name or hosting responsibilities. John.
Yes.
How are you?
Oh, I'm excellent. Everything's fabulous.
I feel like you're being disingenuous right now. I mean, it's not like I can see you or anything, but you're reading disingenuous. Are you sure you're okay?
Oh, I'm wonderful. What could possibly be wrong with the world?
Do you think you should maybe, you sound super angry, so if you could just count down backwards from 10 and just sort of try to relent. Okay. it's true, there's a lot wrong with the world and everything sucks, but good news, we read an extremely weird book.
Oh my god, this book.
I'm looking really forward to the next 2 weeks where we get to read something small and easy, because this was a... we get a treat now. This every once in a while when we do a book like this, the next episode, it's a treat.
Yeah. It doesn't even matter what we review, because it isn't going to be this, and that's great.
That creates the treat. So we are about to review, or discuss at the very least, Wraithu, which is a role-playing game based on a series of novels by an author named Storm Constantine.
Yeah, and, you know, just a quick content warning on this. This has some real problematic sex stuff in it.
Yeah, there's definitely some weird sex stuff going on. In fact, I would say that this book is almost entirely sex stuff.
God, I mean, there's a lot of it, but there's also just a lot of weird world-building stuff in addition to that.
Yeah, okay, so this is basically the perfect storm of a bad book, because we have a lot of different sort of categories of bad book that we discuss on the show on a regular basis. One of the most common categories is big ideas but nothing to do. This definitely has that. Another one is ultra-complicated rules for no reason, and boy, does this ever have that.
I mean, it's also based on a license and isn't really about anything but that license.
Yeah, there's nothing else to do but play in that license. But here's some fun news, John. I couldn't help myself on this one, and I actually researched just a little tiny bit about the books that this is based on. And you know what's crazy? They're set 10 years after the RPG is.
Yeah. You get to play the lead up to the story so that, you know, your characters can be established so that when the story starts, you can slide right in there.
God damn it. The choice of words, I swear.
Just like a raging Oana Leem.
Right into a waiting, what is it, Ume La?
Sumi La.
Okay. So these novels are about a new race of people. They have superseded humanity. It is the not-so-distant future. Next Sunday AD, one might even think. And these people, known as Wraithu, have come to supplant humanity, although they aren't quite done with that process yet.
Yeah, this is basically mid-apocalypse. Like, we're not quite post-apocalypse, but it is, like, right around the time that the apocalypse is currently going.
Well, yeah, and the book kind of, I feel like it doesn't get its own time scale even a little bit, because there's points where it'll be like, hey, when you're playing as a Wraithu, you should be either somewhere between 16 and 30 years old, because this is a new species, and there's not a lot of them that are old yet. So if you're playing as one, you've got to be a brand spanking new one. But also, the whole world has regressed to 17th century technology, and no one understands the origin or remembers the history of the Wraithu. And I'm like, but it couldn't be more than 30 years ago.
It's a very weird amount of nonsense where the book both wants to have, like, a very established group of these Wraithu, where they're like, oh yeah, we want to have, like, various tribes and societies, and they've set up things, and we want there to be a structure to it, but they also are like, oh, but we wanted this to be early, and we keep saying that, like, the world has just fallen apart very recently, everything's fucked up, no one knows what anything is, and so you have wildly different perspectives every time you read something in the book.
And that's not just because the perspective is shifting throughout the book. This book doesn't, it's all written from, you know, omniscient narrator perspective, except for the many millions of banal quotes that tend to pepper it. But just like as if the author himself, because this isn't written by Storm Constantine, but by an author who adapted it, wasn't quite sure when things are set or didn't get enough information about the history or backstory from the original author. So you have this problem where it's a brand new society of Wraithu, these dual-gendered, perfect, mostly male-looking people, but it's a brand new society, but they have no recollection of how the society started or why any of the tribes of them are named what they are or where the customs of the tribes came from. And it's not like it's not one of those things where, like, they faded into existence one day and they didn't have the knowledge. No, they came, they have an origin story and stuff. They just don't know it.
It's very weird. It is a very weird choice.
Yeah, and you also run into this problem that we're going to see right away. Actually, this is a good chance for us to dive right into that opening fiction, which I know you want to.
Oh my God, I want to just really get into this opening fiction because it touches on several things that are very wrong with this book and that the book doesn't seem to realize.
Yes. Yeah, and just once again, to really get to that content warning thing, when I said they're dual gender, what I mean primarily is that the Wraithu are hermaphroditic, but at the same time, they exist outside of human gender roles. Each one of them has a functional inserting type genital and a functional receiving type genital and can use both as wanted or needed. That said, the book doesn't really... It keeps talking about how they're more complete people. In fact, they are fully complete people because they have all of male and female inside of every one of them. And that's not what a complete person is. Gender isn't the full gestalt of the human experience.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm also sorry. To We're say gonna have that, a lot... like, there's just all of the things with gender and sex in this are very fraught. So just know that.
To give you the most bare-bones concept of what you're playing as in this game, imagine if a young Iggy Pop was blown through Cher's closet by a tornado. And that's what they all look like, okay? Got it. Go ahead with the short fiction, John. Let's hear it.
Okay, so before you really know almost anything about this world or what a Wraithu is or anything, you get this opening fiction. And we are, from the point of view of a sad, dumpy teenager going to high school who is going to definitely, you know, ring familiar with several people of just that, you know, I'm not very popular. I'm kind of overweight. I mostly just want to keep my head down and not get fucked with during the day. Like, it's a very sad, depressed character. And also, we get a little bit about how, like, oh, you know, some of his friends have gone missing. Like, either he thinks they've left or they've just, you know, disappeared.
But because he's a little on the self-absorbed side, because, again, he's very much a woe-is-me kind of dumpington of a kid, where most of his dialogue is things like, oh, the school is run by the jocks, and if they catch me, I'm like prey before a herd of hungry wolves, because that's just the natural order of high school. Also, there's a picture of him with big old moobs, and he's wearing a shirt that says, I abuse Linux.
Yes.
Which is going to come in important later when we discuss how... Yeah, you know, let's do it now. Not now? Okay, please. Please go ahead, John.
I want to finish this before we actually dive into the world, because it's important that you read all of this and then realize why it's fucking stupid.
Carry on, my friend.
All right. So this kid eventually gets dropped off by the bus and is waiting for his mom to pick him up in her car.
Right, yeah. Bus and car.
Uh-huh. And instead, a car full of football hooligans, the local football captain and his cronies, are coming out of a liquor store, and they're like, oh, we're gonna mess with this guy and shove him into their car. They go driving.
And it's important... It's very it's noteworthy that he doesn't even try to run or fight or anything. He even in his inner monologue that is the story, he's like, I might as well go with him. I guess this is the end of my life. These guys are definitely going to rape me or kidnap me or beat me or worse. Okay, let's see where the car goes.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say that's the thing. Like, if you were me in high school and a group of people were going to come after you, you'd be like, ugh. It's the same thing where you're like, if I try and like run or do anything, it's just going to be worse. So let's just let them fuck around. I know you didn't have that experience because you were a sexy high school boy.
Well, so first of all, I was a sexy high school man because it took me a while to graduate. But also, I feel like there's a difference for me between, you know, if they're just going to pick on me a bunch and call me a fat kid and maybe give me a noogie or whatever. But he's like, these guys are going to murder me. This is the end of me today. Which I feel like at that point, even if I'm pretty sure I'm going to get beat up either way, I'm going to put my feet to the ground.
Well, you haven't been beaten down by life yet.
Sure I have. I'm fucking 40 now.
No, I mean as a kid.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, as a kid, I was a skid.
Exactly. Unlike this kid.
Yeah. So, anyway, he's in a car with a bunch of excited, bullyish football players.
Yeah. They drive him around town before taking him to a rundown part of town that's, like, where the gangs are.
Yeah, and they drive him long enough that he has no idea where he is or how he got there. They specifically get him lost.
Yeah, he's like, I gave up trying to figure out where the fuck we were going because there was no way I was going to actually remember all of this. We are somewhere in town. I have not been.
Yeah. And then they drag him into a basement.
Yep. They push him down there, and lo and behold, there in the basement is just a full-on Yaoi Sparkles fucking, like, I want to say he's part of the group that is, like, all of these are sexy, skinny, tall Yaoi boys, but these are the ones that are the bad boys, so they've got leather and mesh.
Yeah, they're very Mad Max Yaoi's.
They're like, we've got mohawks and tattoos and mesh shirts.
Yeah, and all of them have long, luscious, sexy hair so that they look like... Basically, all of the art in this book looks like it, what the stuff that the Sandman comics turned down.
Yeah, this is all very much like, ooh, I decided to make an entire race of dream, and you're like, please don't.
Mm-hmm. And all of them have magnificent cum-gutter V-shape bodies and so on, and... are entirely breastless, as far as you can tell from other than the fact that sometimes they're given feminine hips or facial features, they are hermaphroditic but decidedly male about it.
So there's a scuffle, and eventually he gets knocked out, finds himself tied to a slab in a room with some other guys there. We assume the other football jocks. And then someone cuts his wrist open, cuts their wrist, and essentially, like, mingles their blood and then leaves. This starts the transformation, which is several days of torturous pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's starvation and pain.
Yeah, he has spent 3 days starving and dirty in a room before this, and now he is essentially in the worst pain of his life imaginable. Mm-hmm. And once that finishes, he wakes up to find that same like lithe Yaoi punk in the room with him and is like, hey, I was your friend. The one that you were sad was gone. It's me. I became a sexy dude. Now you are also a sexy dude. That's my gift to you. Let us bone.
Yeah. He's like, I am Carmine, and your name no longer matters, for you are Bowline, the knife to my blade or whatever. And then they have sexy style weird sex with their weird genitals, which, by the way, are pictured on the cover of the book. The male, God, what was it called again, John? The
Uwana Lim?
The Uwana Lim is pictured on the cover of the book.
Yeah. You don't know it when you see it, because there's a knife and then something that just sort of looks like a flower knife, and you're like, all right, that's weird. And then you realize later that, oh no, that's what they have for a penis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's more or less the end of the story. He becomes Bolin, the golden, beautiful god of being one of these guys, these Hars, as the book uses as the gender terminology. And that's when it ends, but there's a lot of stuff I feel like that the short fiction leaves unspoken.
Now,
that might be the best way to examine it.
Yeah. Now, you read this, and you immediately get an idea of what you think you're going to be getting into. You're like, mm-hmm. okay, Wraithu are basically vampires, but instead of like drinking blood, they are just sexy androgynous dudes. And like when they bite you, you don't just turn into a vampire. You turn into a sexy vampire. And you're like, okay, all right, I get it. It's like modern day. There's some stuff going on. Great. It's then that you find out that the world has essentially gone through several cataclysms to the point where there are most nations have either been nuked or like earthquaked or tsunamied such that there are like only a few small bastions of cities.
Yeah, we just get sort of a generic description of what the Earth basically revolted and was like, I'm tired of all these humans. So at the same time, earthquakes, tidal waves, fires, big diseases, clouds of things. Also, random computer viruses on every single computer in the world all at once, even the ones that weren't connected to anything. Every one of them breaks because of computer viruses. Meanwhile, acid boils up and it just goes on like this. It's just, you know, everything goes fucking wrong.
Yeah. So at this point, it's like, oh, and then the Wraithu showed up. So it's not like, oh, that's what's going to happen. It's, oh no, the world has essentially crumbled into just small outposts of humanity where they've managed to like throw up some walls and maintain a little bit of civilization. And the rest of it is just sort of wild fucking nonsense. And then the Wraithu show up as a new species that is both mm-hmm. male and female and is superior to humans in every way. They're more in touch with creation and nature and magic, and they have both male and female. They don't care about gender or sexuality. It's all, you know, very enlightened. And then you learn about what they are and you're like, oh no, actually you're not. None of that is true.
No, they aren't existing outside of gender. They are very gender hierarchical. They are very much, I mean, what I really want to say before we get into this part of it is that the kid who was the main character of the opening fiction 150% buried the lead. The world has ended and he's all be like, oh, fat kids have it hard in high school. My mom has to pick me up in her car, which are all gone.
I'm
no going to
go home and play
buses.
Video games. How? What? Why?
I have an I abuse Linux shirt, even though every computer in the world crashed a year ago. And it's like, dude, you buried the lead. There was a lot of shit going on before your sad sack routine.
Oh, yeah. The fact that we get into this and I'm like, your whole deal shouldn't be, oh, man, the bullies at school. Am I right? It should be, oh, there's a shortage on medicine and we're going to die.
Yeah. Instead of him being like, oh, a lot of my friends feel like they've run away. How could you blame him? What with the problems these days? Which is the kind of shit that you could say in any year between now and the beginning of high schools.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, oh, some of my friends transferred to different schools. I'm like, what other schools? If there's one school, you're doing great in this society.
All right, so you may be wondering when we're finally going to talk about the rules of this game, and I'll tell you, it's at page 128, which is when you first see your first wild rule out in floating in the middle of a paragraph about how great Wraithu are.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that not only is it a property based on something, so you're like, okay, we have to establish what that is so that anyone coming to this that isn't familiar with it can at least know what's going on. But also that property is fucking buck wild. So you've got to actually be like, hey, so you're going to be playing as a hermaphroditic androgynous wizard vampire. And depending on the tribe that you're in, you might have a gender role or you might not. Anyway, the world is fucked and you're not doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into the Wraithu. The Wraithu for, this book was written, the RPG was written in 2005. And I assume that the actual original Wraithu novels were written significantly before then, because the only way to really kind of conceptualize what Wraithu are is, once upon a time, there was a woman who desperately, for her own reasons, needed Yaoi to exist. But for her, for whatever reason, it did not. And therefore, she created her own Yaoi with arcane rules that force the Yaoi to be Yaoi, as opposed to resetting to a non-Yaoi state, which will not do. Because, among other things, only boys can be incepted is the word, by the way, for being turned into a Wraithu from being a human. Only men and boys can be incepted as Wraithu. Their sex that they have with each other, which is called Aruna, is not only way better than human sex in every way, but also completely mandatory. They have to have Aruna all the time, or they get violent and crazy.
Yeah, and not only that, this going back to the story, you have to have sex after the whole inception thing in order to set your transformation, because if not, then you might, like, mutate or go feral or something. Which
so
means...
So what you're telling me... Please, go ahead. Don't let me finish the thought. By all means, take it.
Which means that the Wraithu kidnap young boys, because it very specifically says that younger is better for this, because older men tend to die during the transformation.
They have too much history that they have to self-evaluate during the 3 days of lying there turning into a Wraithu, and usually that history backs up, like, feedback waves into them and kills them. So yeah, it's usually 16 to 19 year olds who this happens to.
So they're kidnapping young boys, torturing them, and then essentially raping them afterwards, because you wake up after torture, are messed up, and someone next to you who now looks, you know, like a weird Iggy Pop is like, we have to have sex or you're going to die. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, if that sounds a lot like, say, for example, the common misconception about the indoctrination of children into gay or LGBT lifestyles, then yes, it does. It sounds pathetically and dangerously like that.
Yeah, it is.
Cybergoth forced me gay.
You read it and you're like, oh, this is a cult. You go in and they torture you and force you to, like, basically break your mind and body. And then they're like, great, now you're one of us and you can't fight back anymore. But also...
Also, you never could, because, of course, these things aren't just better than people. They are significantly better than people in every regard.
Yes. Wraithu are hardier and stronger and faster and smarter and better and also magical. Just baseline magic.
I got to complete that thought when I was saying that basically it's not just Yaoi. It also has kind of traces of, like, Super Hulock or Omegaverse stuff where this is a whole arcane universe of rules designed to force these creatures to have sex with each other all the time and not with anybody else. If they have sex with humans, their bodily fluids are so toxic and melty that they kill the humans from the inside.
Yeah.
These Hars
is that, okay, they are supposed to be like, you think about it, and like Jeff was saying, this sort of Yaoi idea of what I really want is to see two sexy, skinny dudes kissing. And you're like, okay, sure, I get it. I understand that. However, it very much, the whole thing feels like a very straight woman wrote this, because, like, she couldn't conceive of any sex beyond penis and vagina, as all of these characters are just like, oh yeah, we're all perfect human forms now, but when we, you know, get down and dirty, one person's got to be the lady and one person's got to be the man. Like, that's just
biologically, how it is. Biologically, to these to the Wraithu, to the Har, as they're kind of non, like, their word for one or them is known, they literally change physical appearance depending on who's pitching and who's catching. If you're on the receiving end, if you are going to be taking the inserted into role in the very regimented sex that these folks have, your penis equivalent unfolds and turns into little pube flowers, and your balls go away.
Yeah, you essentially invert. You're like, all right, I'm going to just have a vagina now. All right.
I mean, they technically have both things. Like, they have both I keep forgetting the names of them now. But they have basically the penis and the vagina at all times. But their penis, if they're not currently using it for sex, and specifically not just if they're not currently using it for sex, but if someone else is currently giving it to them, then their penis unfolds and just turns into, like, pubes instead. Like, you have a rose stuck to the front of you. It doesn't turn into a vagina. It just unfolds so you don't have to see an unsightly penis.
Yeah, the fact that the sex just comes down to you have to have, like, standard P and V sex is so weird that you're like, oh, I decided to do an entire thing where I've made up an excuse to have sexy boys get together and they have to have sex, but I also don't like the idea of two penises at the same time, apparently, so let's just go ahead and fix that.
Yeah, there's a single passage in here that I felt was more instructive to the worldview of the authors, and I'm not sure which author to blame here, but this one passage is more instructive of their worldview than any other thing in the book, and it's just, here I go, a har is both male and female and has all the required organs for both functions. They can take a dominant or passive role in Aruna and do not have to stick to the same role. So there's a lot that you can kind of glean from this. It may sound relatively simplistic, but you have to keep in mind that it's being given to you as this is how these creatures are different than humans. Mm-hmm. So they're saying that unlike humans, they can take a dominant or a passive role, and unlike humans, they can switch between them.
Yeah, the book in several other places continues to say that if you are the one penetrating, you are dominant, and if you are the one being penetrated, you are passive.
Yeah, which, and it says a lot more than... Go ahead.
Wow. No, just... That is... obviously, no one's ever heard of a power bottom.
No. Or of a switch. or of pegging, or any of these sorts. Or even just of using your hands and mouth and butthole. Okay, a har is both male and female and has all the required organs for both. John, let me ask you a quick question. What are the required organs for being female?
Let's see. You probably want some heart, lungs, liver in there.
Yeah. I mean, that in and of itself is already a backwards horrible thing to say, because if a woman for medical reasons loses her vagina, if she never had one in the first place, is she still a woman? Obviously, of course. But not to this book, when it says that they have all the required tools to be both genders, that means they have a penis-y thing and a vagina-y thing.
Yes, indeed.
This sentence leaves you wondering what the authors of this book thought actual gay people are like. And I'm going to go ahead and float a theory that I think you and I both very much agree on, that this person's opinion of real world, actual living gay people is when they meet them and they meet couples, their first thought is, all right, which one of you is the girl?
Yes, this is definitely one of those things where you're like, oh, clearly, you know, any couple, you're going to have someone who's the man and someone who's the woman, if no matter what type of, you know, couple you are. And it's just, there's a very weird sense to things where you'd think that going in, you're like, oh, this is probably someone who's got, you know, some very wide open views on the whole gender and sex thing because of the way they made this. But it ends up coming across very repressive.
Yeah, it's exceedingly restrictive. I mean, notably, there's no mention anywhere throughout this book of hand stuff or mouth stuff. And a question I asked John in the middle of our read-through was, do you think these guys do anal?
And the thing is, I feel like 100% I can guarantee you the answer is no, because any type of sex that isn't Aruna is a waste, because Aruna is actually literally magical. Like, it is life-sustaining, but also creates, like, the ability to use magical energy as well. And I assume that they would be like, oh, no, there's no reason to do that.
And there's more than just that. There also, Aruna is just free for the taking. When you walk into, if the people that you, if the Wraithu that you're meeting are of the same tribe as you, you could just be like, hey, you, let's fuck. And they'll be like, them's fucking words. And the implication, is fairly strong that the reason for that is because the process of inception that makes you into a Wraithu also makes you hot. And why would a hot person turn down sex from every single other hot person?
Yeah, there's a bit where it says like, oh yeah, you'll wake up after you've been transformed, which is Althea is the name of the transformation. Because everything, this is also a book where everything has a dumb name for no reason. So yeah. Once you go through Althea, you wake up, and regardless of what you were like when you were, you know, not a Wraithu, you wake up and you realize you want sex and you don't have any hang-ups about it anymore. Like, you get incepted, and now you're like, oh yeah, I don't have any weird concepts that if I was straight before, now I'm basically banging a skinny dude. That doesn't bother me. Don't worry. Not only does your body change, your mind changes as well, so that you're cool with it.
Yeah, your mind changes a lot. This game has merits and flaws, and one of the flaws that you can take is weird sexual perversion. Which is that you just did something that was either illegal or particularly weird or whatever, and somehow it made it through your inception, and now it's still kind of part of your mind. So it'll be like, oh yeah, just like every other Wraithu, though, you like and enjoy and can have ready access to all Aruna you could ever possibly want. But also, sometimes, because you're a broken, flawed monster, you like other things as well. So there's a lot of... It feels like this is supposed to be a book about liberation and losing hang-ups and becoming a beautiful kind of non-binary person. It's really, really not.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into the tribes because this book, for all that it is very weird, is basically just Vampire the Masquerade, but you're all sexy dudes.
Because yeah, absolutely.
There are all of these tribes that you can just go ahead and say, oh, it's clans. These are all the clans from Vampire, except now they're called tribes.
Yeah, right down to the point where they have vague, mysterious superpowers that there aren't rules for anywhere.
Yeah, they all have various things that they're better at. They all have their own ways of dealing with things for being in that tribe. And also, all of them have opinions about all of the other ones.
Interestingly, they're divided when you get to the tribe section. It'll be like, thoughts of this tribe, lifestyle, clothing options, how they treat Aruna. And then the last one is always the section just called enemies, which is just supposed to be a list of the other tribes that hate them. And there's only like two that have any. Most of their opinions of each other are, they seem mysterious. If only Car still existed so we could go over there and find out.
Yeah. Also, whenever they talk about the various tribes, you also get like three different ones that are like, oh, the Wraithu in this tribe are especially sexy. And I'm like, you already said that twice before. You can't just say every tribe is very sexy. They're all baseline sexy.
They all kind of look the same, honestly. The only real difference is in their clothing. And there's one tribe that has, like, magic hair. But otherwise, when you get blood mingled by one of these guys and you go through Althea, you come out the other side, a gorgeous, sexy, 7-foot-tall har. Everyone does. So whenever every time the book's like, oh, and these ones are particularly attractive, you're like, okay, but via what process? Is it because they take better care of themselves, or what are we doing? And of course, don't worry about how well they take care of themselves. They're immune to every earthly disease, and they don't appear to age, and no one even knows how long they live, and they don't need to work out to stay super hot. Nothing could possibly get in the way of their ability to leisurely bone each other.
Yeah.
The tribes.
Yeah. So the Kolurastes is the, we have control over our hair. We are a nomadic snake tribe.
They're just plain snaky.
Yeah, that's their whole thing. They are known as the Serpent Hara. And they're mysterious. And
they're supposed to have magical like Medusa level controls over their own hair, but there are no rules for that, and there's no mention that there ever will be. It just keeps talking about how sometimes these guys will whip out with their hair and grab things and use their hair as clothing. They're like a whole tribe of sexy Bayonetta people, but no rules for that, though, so you figure it out.
No, I mean, basically the whole thing is like, there are rumors that they can do that, and maybe it's true, and I'm like, don't, just fucking, this is a book, and if I'm playing one, I need to know if I can hair a guy.
Oh my god, there are so many things in this book that are like, we are unwilling to generically say no, so we're going to be like, there are rumors of it, maybe it might be possible. Like, there's a whole tribe of these folks that it was just invented so that you could give women a hope that they might be acceptable themselves.
Hmm.
Of course, the tribe gets no stat line or anything. They're a legend. But the Zagane tribe, if you find them, and if you can afford them, why, they might have the secret technology to accept women.
So, the Cool Rasties, their whole thing is they're snaky, they've got psychic powers, they're good at bartering, and they've got the hair thing.
They're a little more perceptive than the others.
There's the Jelliming, which is just the Ventru. If you've ever played Vampire the Masquerade, that's just what they are. They're the Wraithu that are actually trying to make a society, but they're all like, oh, we're the upper crust. We only incept the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And so they're all, love the smell of their own farts.
Right. I actually don't have that much of a concept of vampire tribes, and so, except for the obvious ones. And so for me, these guys felt more like risen Atlanteans or Babylonian culture come back from the past or something, where they all wear ultra ornate armor and they spend their time having big ass superiority complexes.
Let's see, what else is there? Oh, the Kakahar.
Wandering nomadic desert dweller wizards.
Yeah, they're desert nomads. That's it. That's their whole deal. Anything you might think a desert nomad has, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, curved swords, absolutely. Lots and lots of diaphanous veils, you got it, buddy.
Hell yeah.
Real good at inscrutable magic, of course.
Now, you may have remembered that I said that the Cool Rasties were a nomadic tribe. Well, so are them. Also, the Obliviata are a nomadic tribe. They've got a lot of nomadic tribes in this.
Yeah, most of the tribes, honestly, are nomadic, so it's weird that they keep telling us whether they are or aren't. The Obliviata are the religious tribe, for the most part, and also the most mysterious. They have the weirdest inception process out of all of them, in that they poison you. You have to go to them and be like, I would like to be incepted. And they're like, okay, well, drink this wine, and the wine has all their blood in it, and it's supposed to kill you, but if you somehow survive, then you get incepted. That's not even really the weirdest one. The weirdest one is Colorastes, who specifically incept prepubescent children.
With the
understanding that when they become pubescent, they'll finish their inception.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we do this, and then don't worry, though. You don't have to, if you get them young enough, you don't have to have sex with them yet. Because that would be even grosser than we're already saying when you're, fucking a 16-year-old. So, great.
The Obliviata are the ones who, they consistently are making up new gods. Because, again, we're talking about a very young culture. And they have completely rejected the lost remnants of human civilization and human culture. To the point where they seem gleefully unaware of Christianity or Judaism or what have you, and instead spend all their time being like, and I name the moon Lilith, the god of moonliness, and that's very important to them.
Yeah, they can't do magic like everyone else does. Instead, they essentially channel their god, and so all of their magic is supposed to be like, oh, we don't cast spells, we just ask for miracles.
Mm-hmm. And they're the closest thing you're going to find to what basically every one of these things is a sexy anime dude stereotype. And this one is the sexy Romani.
Yep. They go in caravans. They are good with animals. They scavenge things real well. And that's just them.
After that is the Sul, which is the mysterious, inscrutable Middle Easterners.
Yep. They're real good at doing magic. Great.
If these are starting to bleed together, hey, you're right.
None of these matter because none of them are like super distinct, except for the last ones that we're going to talk about. The Uigena.
The Uigena in the novels, to my understanding, are basically the kind of bad guys. But in this book, they've picked up sort of a, because they're part of the opening fiction, and we get way more about them and their leader than any other culture, they almost feel like the main tribe.
Well, they were the first tribe. So the Uigena were in Megalithica, because this all takes place on basically Earth, but everything has a different name.
Except for Kansas, which accidentally gets called Kansas at one point.
Yeah.
The whole world's, the far Al Sul, which is definitely just the Mediterranean, is almost to the other end of the world from Megalithica, which is basically North America, where Kansas is.
Yeah.
It doesn't end there. Also, Linux exists, and so does every brand of gun and car.
Yes. This is very clearly Earth, and then someone just decided to rename everything.
Also, the music industry had a grunge uprising in 1991. That's in the fucking book.
So the Uigena are the super punk violent ones who want to just murder humans. Essentially, they aren't going to incept you, they will kill you.
Oh, so much so that their leader, John, their leader is a fellow by the, I guess they are a fellow. No, it's just he. They use he as the pronoun in this.
Yeah.
It's he, har, and hara.
Well, the har and hara aren't pronouns. That's for person. Like,
yeah,
you would say
one.
Like, if I said, yeah, someone went to the store, instead it would be some har went to the store.
Yeah, exactly. It's like trying to play Pony Finder. I'm up to speed. We're like, every pony loves going to the pony market or whatever. These guys are like, every hara knows this ancient legend.
Exactly.
Manticore the 70 is called Manticore the 70 because he once slew 70 humans in a fit of rage. And why am I leaning on this so hard? Oh, it's because it's in the book 15 times. Every time he gets mentioned, they explain his name again.
Yep. The
every time.
So they're you would assume the villains, but like Jeff said, there's so much from their point of view that you're like, am I supposed to be a ridiculous murderer? Is that the point of this?
Right, because they're basically crust punks that are ultra sexy androgynous vampires. They spend most of they're filthy, but they have wild punk style makeup. They're basically cyber goths. And their culture is, we don't have one. We raid old human civilizations for beer, and they murder everybody.
Yeah. Now, the other one that's super fucked up is the Vars. The Vars... Oh, I know that the Unea are in there. It doesn't matter. They're the less angry version of the Uigena.
Yeah, the Uigena begat the Unea, who are like chill punks instead.
Yeah. Now, the Vars, though, are probably the worst. They are a military tribe where everything is like, we believe in going out and kicking ass and fights, but also we have 100% divided our society into gender lines. We have Wraithu that are permanently like doing the guy jobs, and then some that are the lady ones. The guys go out and fight, and the women stay at home, obviously.
And repair the armor. Of course, we don't call them that. We call them feminine and masculine Wraithu. But yeah, they have a rigid hierarchical gender caste system. And when I say hierarchical, it's because the dudes are in charge.
Yes, it is actually considered like if there was a point where like, oh, we don't have enough feminine har, then one of the masculine ones could just sort of step down, but it is considered like a great shame, even though you are doing it for the good of your tribe.
And this does lead to the Vars, but when they incept people, they very rarely incept someone that they think will make a masculine har. They don't want that. They would prefer to keep their prestigious positions of soldierly power. So they go out and they try to incept the, for lack of a better term, most feminine teenage boys they can find to swell their harems.
Yeah, it's... God, they're just awful. I hate them so much.
Yeah, and you know, their whole thing is their belief for why they're doing this is because something we may not have mentioned yet about the Wraithu is that they can't reproduce without humans, and yet they are all hell-bent on eliminating the humans from the world. Their plan is get rid of all these humans, then we'll figure out how to reproduce without them, and then profit.
And yeah.
The VAR idea is if we enforce human-style gender roles, it will unlock reproduction like an Xbox Chivo.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I guess if we force someone to act like a lady long enough, then they'll be able to have babies too. And you're like, that's a real fucking stupid worldview, but sure, great, go for it, my dude.
You may find yourself wondering, do these creatures have wombs and interior biology that would match both genders? We don't know, and neither do they, because despite the fact that they are smarter and more inquisitive and more worldly than any human ever possibly could be, they all earthly sciences have been lost, and they don't like science to believe that their ignorance is better than your science.
Hmm.
They don't really like dissecting their own species, and they make a big deal of burning their dead as soon as they possibly can to keep humans from finding out anything about them.
Yeah, if they get into a fight, they will always steal their dead away so that no one can take a look at them.
And that's one of those things where I'm like, come on, they've already taken over most of the world and they still get into routine machine gun fights with humans. And you're telling me that they have perfectly maintained a record of no dead bodies ever for anyone at any point? Because it's not like these things are Supermans. They're you can shoot them with a gun and they'll die. You'll learn right away when you get into the rules that actually they're pretty bad at everything. And this is one of those games that has way too many rules and way too bad of chances to succeed at anything and way too many penalties. But yeah, if you shoot one, it's just gonna die. So this whole thing where it's like, and no human has ever actually seen a dead one. It's like, that's just bullshit. I guess you needed it for the convenience of the story.
All right. It's been 50 minutes. You want to talk about any of the rules of this?
Sure. There are 6 stats. They range in value from 4 to 20, 5 to 20 if you're a Wraithu. The way you determine your stats is you take 4 and add a d6 to that, and then you do that for all 6 of the stats, and then you have 10 more points to spend on those stats. Those stats are will, strength, dexterity,
stamina, perception, stamina, willpower, yeah, and intelligence.
Thank you.
Now, the book has 2 different ways of doing this. You can either do random rolls for basically everything, because you're like, skill points you can get a random roll for, your stats you can do random rolls for, everything you can do that, or you can just do a point by system instead. The thing to point out with this is, if you do the random rolls for your stats especially, mm-hmm. you get, like Jeff said, you have a 4, you roll a d6, and then you can distribute 10 points afterwards.
Right.
That is great, but if you do the point buy, you just get a 4 and everything, and then 34 points, which is the same as if you had almost rolled a 6 for everything. So mm-hmm. if you do the point buy, you're just like, oh, this is a million times better than just trying to randomly roll down the line and maybe I get something.
Yeah, and weirdly, every one of the rules that you're going to have to go through and do rolling for, and there's a lot of random rolling and character creation in this, has its own little section for how to do it if you would prefer to do point buy for just that section, and it vacillates. The stat one, it's overwhelmingly the better option to use point buy, but for a lot of the other ones, it's just the average. It's like, oh, you can either add a 3 or a d6.
Well, it's always a 4. It is always slightly better than average
okay.
to do the point buy.
There are so many stats beyond those 6. Just so many. There's combat stats that you need to get track of by taking averages of various stats that your character has, like dodge, damage, speed, and block, and repairing weapons is for one of your combat stats. But also, range damage, range dodge, range speed, and ranged weapon repair are different stats that you need to track independently.
Well, yeah, because everything is based off of what bonuses or penalties you have from your stats, but you don't start even getting like a plus one to anything until you get to, I think it's 11. 10 or 11. 11 in a stat.
It's 11, yeah. Yeah, which means that you literally can't get bonuses unless you're spending your bonus points. Or you do get some bonuses to a couple of stats and a couple of skills from your tribe selection.
Yeah. But
so you can, that's so the only way to get even to a plus one.
Yeah, but so much of it is going to be either a zero or maybe a plus one that you're like, oh, this is just sort of a, all right, maybe something shifts mildly in one direction or another. Okay.
Yeah, you keep doing these complicated like equations to determine things. Like, oh, well, I guess I need to figure out what my character's composure rating is. And it'll be like, well, take twice your willpower bonus and add your intelligence bonus to that. Add that to 5 and add the roll of a D6. Then average by dividing by 3. And you're like, okay, but it's always going to be 1, though. Why am I doing all this friggin' work?
Yeah, it's a real weird idea.
Yeah, composure was a bad choice for that because composure works differently. But for all the combat stats like dodge and speed and so on, they're all going to be ones unless you way heavily invest in 2 stats at least, because almost all of them are based on the average bonus of 2 of the stats.
Yeah. So you go down, you get your stats, you get some secondary things, which are energy, which the game is like, maybe you use this, maybe you don't, because energy is just sort of a, oh, every time you do something that is difficult, lose an energy point, or just don't worry about it and it doesn't matter.
The example they use for energy is really weird, because they're like, oh, we've been carrying these heavy packs through the desert for days, zap hamstring. I'm getting very... By the way, all of the Wigena, except for Mantiker, seem to have names taken directly from Space Mutiny.
Yes.
Just putting that out. But also, yeah, it'll be like, oh, we've been carrying these packs through the desert for days. You can't get tired on me now. And I'm like, wait, it's stamina? You already have a stamina stat. Why would energy be stamina?
Oh, because it's your energy points.
Yeah, but it's not, it is informed by your stamina, but like barely. My character for the bonus content, spoiler alert, has 48 energy and has a plus one to stamina. It does not factor heavily into the calculation.
Hey, you know what?
Hmm?
My character for the bonus content has 48 energy and does not have a plus one to stamina.
Because I rolled very slightly less than you. You probably use the point by method for everything, where I use the roll method for everything.
It's real dumb. Everything's dumb.
So, yeah, the two don't even... They vaguely correlate, but not really. So the other ones in there, Psyche is the next one of those substats, and that's your ability to do magic junk.
Kind of.
Sort of, whatever. The game's magic system is one of those hippie magic systems where it's like, oh, you don't even really want to use magic, but if you do, it can be overwhelmingly powerful, but beware, for it might take hold of you, but beware, for it might threaten you. You know, yeah. It's one of those.
And then composure, which is how composed you are, but also how sexy you are.
Yeah, you
radiate sexiness with composure.
Yeah, but you can lose composure points if you're not doing tribally stuff. So if you're spending your time, if you're a Var and you're not acting very Varlish, then you can lose composure for doing that.
Yeah.
You would think that given that it's a relative measure of your attractiveness, that if you were a Var and you started acting all Kakahari, then the Kakahars would be like, ooh, I like the cut of this Var's jib. But no, it doesn't work that way. They can tell that you're not being very Varish, and they think you're gross looking as a result.
Yeah. There are a ton of skills. You get, some amount of skill points, depending on if you do point buy or you randomly roll, but you'll probably end up with about, you know, like 50 something.
Yeah, and somewhere in the 48 to 58 point range.
There are just an absolute metric fuck ton of skills. The system is a D20 roll under. So if I've got a skill of, let's say 11, and I don't have any modifiers to it or anything, like I'm not trying to do it while in a hurricane or some shit, then it's just roll under whatever your skill is to succeed.
In a hurricane. Did you look at the universal modifier chart in here at all, the chart for what the difficulty should be? You get a -2 adjustment on your skills if you are mildly inconvenienced by a slight raise in temperature.
Yeah, no, the chart for your negatives in this are so fucking stupid.
For a species that's supposed to be like better than humans in every possible resolve. It's like, oh, is it 80 out? Getting off the... I'm stuck to the couch.
Ugh, I wore leather pants. Why did I wear leather pants?
How do we even have leather pants? The book repeatedly tells us it's roughly 17th century technology. Ugh. And we're all like 7 feet tall, so there's got to be a run on... If we're digging through old fetish wear, like club wear things, there's got to be a run on the extra large pants.
So yeah, you distribute your points in your skills. Every skill has two stats that will you average to get a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So you might be at best like a +2 to any given skill. And then you get skills from your tribe. So it'll be like, oh, my tribe gave me a +2 to fighting or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. You also get just a generic, I think it's 28 points to spend on whatever with a chart. It's kind of like the bonus points they give you in an Exalted game, for example. Well, they'll be like, here's 28 points. By the way, raising your stat costs 5 of them. Raising a skill costs 3 of them. Buying a merit or flaw costs twice what it's supposed to. It's basically, here's some points, but they're not going to go very far.
Yeah, this does have a merits and flaws system.
Which is hilarious.
The merits and flaws are dumb.
The human merits and flaws, because yes, you can play as a human in this, and not only can you play as a human in this, but there's a 2-page section that's just called For the Women. But so you can start as a human, and they have their own merits and flaws, like, oh, I'm deaf, or I'm blind, or I have trouble with vision, or blah, blah, blah. Things that are all, of course, drilled immediately out of the Wraithu through the process of Althea. They're too perfect for that kind of shit to keep affecting them. The Wraithu merits and flaws are basically the kind of things that kids are inordinately proud of on, like, Tumblr. They're things like
synesthesia.
Yeah, synesthesia, or I'm a portal for the Fae.
Yeah, great.
Do they
keep
anything?
Losing my keys, and it's not because I'm not paying attention. It's because the Fae are hiding them.
Yeah, so that's more or less what you're picking when you're picking your Wraithu merits is, stuff like synesthesia or extraordinary lunar luck, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And yeah. You can get sort of a chance for a botched Althea so that you end up, you're like, oh, yeah, you've got like poor vision, even though you're one of the perfect Wraithu. Oh, that's so sad. Everyone thinks you're a sad baby.
I think my favorite one of those is reversed growth, where the Althea process doesn't make you a foot taller. It makes you 1 to 3 feet shorter instead.
Yeah. Everyone else running around is like 7 foot tall, and you are someone's like 6'5" king.
Yep. To the credit of the book, it doesn't immediately go like, and these guys get way less Aruna than the other Hars.
Oh my God. There's like 3 quotes per page in this of just random dumb bullshit. But one of them is someone making fun of another Wraithu's penis. And I was like, what the shit is this?
Yeah, I guess he just had a shitty limb.
Yeah, he's like, ooh, that's the smallest Uana limb I've ever seen. You sure you aren't just a flat-chested woman? I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
You know what drives me crazy, and it actually makes perfect sense based on the way this book, these novels were written and so on. The main character of the novels is a human woman.
Of course.
Yeah, because that, of course, I mean, absolutely, of course. And it's because that way she can go on a tour of sexy dudes making out. But of course, they would never deign to have sex with her because that would be icky. And also, it would instantly kill her.
Yes. So...
It's got a super complicated wound system.
You've got minor and major wounds. Your minor wounds basically just act like your standard hit points. If you get minor wounds, they just come off your track and it doesn't really matter. Major wounds, you've got, as a Wraithu, you've got 5 more than a human.
And you have a set number. It's not a random thing. You have 15.
Yeah, you have 5 more than a human. Humans have 10. You have 15. Mm-hmm. And the 5 extra ones that you have don't impose penalties. So you can take 5 major wounds and still function normally. The next 5, you get a -5 to everything you're doing, and the next 5 is a -10 to everything you're doing.
Right. And it's not that difficult to treat minor wounds because you can use Agmara, which is this game's magical healing energy, which is often heavily generated through Grisicon, which is Aruna, for magic purposes.
Yeah. Fuck magic helps you heal, so good. Mm-hmm. Good on that.
But it only helps heal minor wounds. Raithu in particular are not especially qualified doctors or first aid people because they're so used to the fact that they could just bone their way to healthy living.
Yeah, the thing is, for major wounds, even if you are using Agmara and doing magic healing, it still requires someone to use first aid or doctor skill or something along with the magic. So Someone in their tribe has to be able to be like, hey, I'm the one person who remembers what a Band-Aid is, so come over here and I'll zap you with some energy and also patch you up.
Right. Okay, so at this point, we've gone through the process more or less of how to make a character. You've got some hit point equivalents, you've got stats, you've got skills, you've got bonuses to hit and dodge and what have you. The only thing that's really left is magic. This game's magic is balls out. It's a combination of exceedingly unnecessarily complicated and arcane, but also not that difficult once you get into it. Because all of the... It's just like, oh, here are there 12 different types of spells there are. And basically, they all boil down to skill rolls that you can make.
So the way it works is you have a manipulation stat. That's going to be essentially your skill. That's what you're trying to roll under. Mm-hmm. You have a resistance stat, which is if someone tries to cast a spell on you, that's their penalty. Yeah. And then there are three categories of types of spells. There's matter, so you get your elemental, air, earth, fire, water categories. Mm-hmm. Energy, which is spirit, kinetic, attraction, plasmatic, and... kinetic is fairly self-explanatory. It's just, you know, kinetic motion. You can throw things or do stuff. Spirit.
Plasmatic is, yeah.
Spirit is telepathy and messing with people's minds.
Plasmatic is your ability to control Wendy O. Williams.
Great. Thanks. I'm glad you got that awful joke in there.
I needed to get that joke out. It's not my fault you kept stepping on it. It was going to be good.
No, it was bad. It was never good.
It was going to be great.
Plasmatic is electricity, and attraction is literally just attraction. It's like gravity power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, the last one is the most complicated, and it's time control, phasing, destruction, and conversion.
My favorite thing about the time control part is that there's a one-line sentence that feels like it probably should have been removed in editing, which is, no one knows that much about time magic because every single... Raithu who's ever tried to use it has vanished and never come back.
I mean, it's the same thing like phase magic. Oh, this can open up doors to other dimensions, but anyone who does it is probably going to die because the other dimensions don't have to follow our rules of physics or even have breathable air.
Right. But the temporal one literally says that anyone who uses temporal magic vanishes forever. And I was like, well, then why do we even have these stats?
Well, you can't have anything in the changing states, the last four, at all, as a starting character.
No, you have to eventually get there. That is kind of the last major section of character design to get into, the rank system. Despite the Raithu being an extraordinarily young species, they have a very regimented rank structure that is difficult to explain.
Well, they have a caste system for... casting magic, where it is, you start out, every new character is going to be at the bottom of the rung where you're like, what are you? I am the tier one and grade one. And each, there are three tiers, and each tier has three grades.
And they all have the same name from one tribe to another, even though some of these tribes do not remember contacting each other.
Oh, yeah. Like, you've got ones that are like, oh, I'm in, like, England. And this other tribe is in, like, the southwestern deserts of America, but we both use the exact same names for everything.
And the exact same ranks, so they must be some kind of actual, like, measurable difference between rank 1 and rank 2 of tier 1 or tier 2, but we don't know that. It's not said.
Except the Obliviata don't use it, and so it doesn't actually have anything to do with that.
Yeah, which that just makes it worse. So you got these megalithic and North American tribes like the Wigena, which are, oh, we are so insular and crusty punk and isolated that we've never left the rough equivalent of Seattle to the Haight-Ashbury district. And yet we have the exact same rank tools as the Egyptian guys who never come out of Egypt. In fact, we don't even have stats for them. We just know they're called the Cheops. Very imaginative, by the way.
Cheops, prangent sex.
Starch masks.
Anyway,
once you get all this done, oh, there's one last thing to mention. It's not enough to just pick up sword as a skill in this game, because the game's got a convoluted combat system where you need to have both a fighting style, and your fighting style has to have more ranks of skills selected in it than the weapon that you're going to be using in that fighting style.
Yeah, so you can have one-handed weapon fighting style, and then you would also have to put points into, like, sword.
Yeah. And if you just put points into one or the other, you're useless. The only exceptions to that are all ranged weapons, because there's no gun fighting styles. Brawling, if you just want to throw punches at people. And for some reason, fencing. Fencing is a wholly self-contained fighting style, where you know how to fight with rapiers and sabers and so on. Where if you're instead just use a gladius, you need two complete and different skills. What are you going to do?
I would like to read a little bit from this book right now about combat, if I can.
You know how I get if you try to read things directly from the books, John.
You love
it. Very accepting. Please go ahead.
A word of warning. Combat can be fatal. If a character has a tendency to run into any combat situation unprepared and without caution, they can and probably will die. This game is not based on Hollywood rules. It's based on how weapons damage bodies in the real world. If you were faced with a trained swordsman in real life, you'd have little or no hope of coming out alive unless you were similarly trained. This book, for some reason, decided to say, oh yeah, I know we've got an entire book about magical, hermaphroditic, androgynous sex dudes, but come on, learn how to use a sword.
Well, also, they're like, oh yeah, no one has a chance of getting into a fight with a real swordsman and coming out the other end alive. And all I can think is, I've spent the past 230 pages reading about your ubermensch people. What are you talking about? They can't take a few wounds and come out the other side alive.
Yeah, it's just weird. That's why I picked it out, because I was like, this seems weirdly out of place for this book.
Oh, it absolutely does. It feels like the combat system was bolted on from someone who takes RPG combat systems exceptionally seriously. And it's bolted on from both sides, because on the one side, why is it so unnecessarily serious and restrictive in a game where combat's not even the fucking point? And on the other side, who the fuck are you even fighting? This book doesn't have a section about monsters in it. I guess you're supposed to fight other Wraithu. There's no point to rolling against humans. As we've established, humans are a non-entity, non-threat. If you feel like killing them, you just go do it.
Yeah, there's one more thing I wanted to read from this book, and it is, of course, the GM advice for how to deal with problematic players.
Oh, right.
Number one, kill the character. Yes, this might sound harsh, but Wraithu is a harsh world with many dangers for the unwary.
Yeah.
Number two, devote a small amount of time to the split party members, but give more time to the core party. Disruptive players will get bored when they aren't the center of attention. Or three, a gentle nudge, use an NPC to redirect the plot so it's back on course. If your players try to skirt around the issue and don't bite the hook, don't panic, just continue running the game.
But for the love of God, whatever you do, under no circumstances should you talk to your players.
Yes, if a bunch of your players want to do something in your game, and you don't want to do that, immediately make them do it anyway, or kill them.
Yeah, force them to, using your DM magic. Instead of going like, hey, would you not? Or, hey, I wrote this, so I want to do this. Or,
yeah, if you're like, guys, all I have today is this adventure, and I know you want to go do something else, but if you want to do that, I'll write something up later. You want to just hang out and eat pizza?
No, by no means should you do anything that's not chicanery. This book's from 2005. I would have thought it was a lot older.
No, it's it feels very early 90s because, and I've harped on this several times, it feels like someone went, boy, I really want to turn Vampire the Masquerade into an even more fetishy game.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's multiple layers of kind of like fetish stuff in this where first someone wrote the novel, Storm Constantine wrote the novels in the first place, which are obviously an Omegaverse style list of super important rules for why her pet creation of the Wraithu have to fuck each other. And a human woman has to be there watching. And someone came along and read those and was like, man, I sure do love the extremely convoluted method by which you came to writing your porn. But you know what it's missing? Character creation. A combat model. Why don't we put that stuff in here? So there's multiple points that I find incredibly fascinating about the development of this game and how it came into existence.
Yeah, it's just weird that this would exist at all.
Yeah, because it's also missing some of the, it, like a lot of the pretentious or extremely license-driven games of the early to mid-90s, there's nothing to fucking do. And the book more or less acknowledges that, and it even has a section about how to handle a runa with an open playing party.
Oh, yeah.
If you're like, oh, yeah, establish the comfort level of everybody at the table. If for the people who are actually comfortable with role-playing through a runa, role-play through it with them. Describe the give and take and the push and pull of proper sexual runa. For the others, just don't. Say that instead they have nice runa, and then later on they wake up.
Yeah. There's a whole thing in there where they're like, oh, what are the different levels? Well, there's one where you just hand wave it and don't really talk about it and just say, mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens in the background. All the way up to the last one is, now you can get into the real dark shit. You can start talking about cutting people while you fuck them. And I'm like, what? Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
The book also, for probably because it's got so much in common with Vampire, the DNA is so similar, has a lot of LARP rules.
Yes.
The LARP rules aren't great. They're like, hey, it's okay to carry metal weapons, but whatever you do, don't swing them at anybody too hard, okay? But it does recommend you carry foam weapons instead.
Yeah, the LARP rules for like, oh, but what about Aruna? Well, maybe don't do that, but maybe do.
It's up to your comfort level. Well, you know, on the one hand, I don't want to judge people for wanting to get together and do sexual role-playing games. My general take on fetishy or highly sexualized role-playing games is that they're probably not the best idea financially to write because you're really aiming at a very, very small target audience. Because they have to want your fetish. Go ahead.
I'm wondering who is going to be doing this as a sex LARP, because if you're talking about like, oh, it's a bunch of like gay guys out there doing it, you're like, yeah, but the entire point of this is that you don't get to have gay sex. It has to be like penis and vagina sex is the whole point of it. And it's so weird to me. Everything about this game is weird and I hate it.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, John and I, the both of us, are a couple of cis dudes, and sure, I'm bi, but that counts for fuck all in the LGBT discussion community. We are definitely not the right people to talk about this, but it is obviously so very, very wrong that even we are just like, hey, this is crazy right here. I guess. Basically, the people you're looking for are, you want a group of role players, like a collection of them, who all have the same basic fetish. But, I mean, ultimately, again, I don't mind the LARPing, because you're playing someone else. If you're playing an androgynous, hermaphroditic, 7-foot-tall, fuck dude, fuck fellow, and cool, you can get into that headspace, power to you. It's just, the market's really small, I think. It's my general concern when people talk about writing fetish or RPGs is, who's going to buy it? You either have to write every fetish into it so that you try and cast a wide net to like get everybody in FetLife, or you just do the outsider art thing where it's one very, very specific fetish, which is what this is.
Yeah. And, I mean, also, along the whole lines of Vampire, the entire power fantasy of this, outside of the sexual aspect, is just like, oh, you get to be a cool superhuman, and run around. But with Vampire, there's at least, like, you have some weaknesses, so there's some tension, and also humanity exists, and there's things to interact with, where in this you're like, oh, you're a perfect badass super being, but all you do is hang out with other perfect badass super beings, most of them better than you because you're a starting character, and I guess have sex and maybe talk?
Sure. None of the tribes, as of the start of this book, are at open war with each other.
Nope.
When they meet out in the world, they usually kind of, sure, they kind of have some tension between them just because of different lifestyles, but there's no one who's like, ah, the Var have encountered the Galamming. Obviously, skirmishes will break out. That's not a thing.
No. They just sort of have, you know, West Side Story snap dance battles at each other, and then they leave.
Right. So there's really, genuinely, nothing to do but roleplay the very specific, very unusual, and very, very restricted type of sex that this game has to offer.
Yep.
Ersatz penis and Ersatz vagina. That is all that exists in this world. And it's pretty far from enough, I think I'd say.
All right, I'm done talking about this book.
Well, no, you're not, because I need to ask you what your favorite thing about it is.
Ugh. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead and ask me what my favorite thing about this is.
By all means, John, my good friend, what's your favorite thing about this book?
It would definitely be the open magic system, the way that it works as far as like, okay, I've got 2 points in air, or I've got 2 points in fire, or whatever it happens to be. There is a page that's like, oh, this is what the measurement is. So like, it's liters for water. So if you're like, I've got 2 points in water, I can affect 2 liters per round. Great. And you can just describe what you do with it. There's no spells. You don't cast specific things. You just sort of decide, all right, what elements am I using? What is the desired effect? Here, let me tell you what I'm doing. And then you figure out how much you have to spend, and then you do it. Like, it's an open casting system, and it's probably more restrictive than it needs to be, because you don't really start with almost any ability to do it. But I do like the system that is in place. So there you go. Yeah. What's your favorite thing in this?
I'm going to similarly say the psychic system in this book, which we didn't even come to. We kind of forgot to talk about it. All Wraithu have 3 psychic powers, and they are the same 3. They just have them varying degrees of control that they have access to. And I kind of like that, because it gives a little bit of flavor to the Wraithu as a species, because they're not the most basic psychic. Sure, one of them is just telepathy. That one's pretty straightforward. All of these beings can telepathically commute with each other in various degrees of success and strength. Some of them simply don't have the ability at all and can only receive messages from others. But the second one is very unusual and very flavorful. It's just thermokinesis.
Yeah.
All of them can raise the ambient temperature around them, either in general or in a specific one spot. So if you're strong at it, you can start small fires, or you can condense water into ice. And this means that they're very rarely uncomfortable in their environment, which you wouldn't know from reading the chart of difficulty adjustments.
What?
And then the third one is some other thing.
Oh.
It's escaped my mind at the moment. I think it's just sort of general awareness of living creatures nearby or something like that. It wasn't that impressive. Oh, no, it was future sense. So there you have it. I thought that was kind of cool. I thought it gave an interesting flavor to the Wraithu, that thermokinesis in particular is just kind of a weird universal power for all of these beings to have, and I found that kind of cool.
Sure.
That said, John, I now must bring you to the much more difficult question. What is your least favorite thing in this book?
I'm going to have to go ahead and say that narrowing it down to a specific thing, it has to be the inception process.
Man, I knew you were going to say that.
Well, it's one, it is very like fucked up to be like, oh yeah, they have to kidnap, torture, and rape you, but then you like it. And I'm like, that is, ooh, when you're going with some very heavily homosexual tones to things, to then say that they do this in order to get young boys to join them. Boy, that rubs me the wrong way.
It certainly doesn't look good on paper. It which is unfortunately not what is you what the book see. Is printed on.
Yeah. They do this and you're like, oh, I don't think you thought about what that looks like from the outside. Because, ooh, boy, that looks real bad.
It really feels like your power fantasy starts with a different kind of fantasy.
Yeah, it's, oh, man, it's just bad. It's everything that is bad.
I think I already mentioned the thing that I'm going to say is my least favorite thing in this book, which is that one passage that more or less tells you everything you need to know about the people who are making it. But I'm going to tack onto that as well, the couple pages of thoughts for women. Because basically the thoughts for women section is like, how can women play this game? Obviously, every one of the Wraithu is a sexy hermaphroditic dude. So can you play as human women? Yes, the main character of the book is a human woman, the book goes on to tell you. You can basically accept that your life is going to be lived amongst these gentle creatures who might kill you at any moment, and at least you get to watch them have sexy-ass sex. But what about playing as a woman? Like, who? Not playing the character as a woman, but playing if you yourself are a woman and you would like to play this game. Well, you know, consider playing a human woman. And the whole time I'm reading it, I'm like, the whole point of the Wraithu is that they are both genders. Women can just play as Wraithu.
Yeah.
And even if they were all men, women can play as men.
Yeah. God, that entire section is so bad.
I mean, it fails on so many levels at once that I kind of sound like I'm wrong when I'm describing the ways it sounds wrong, because I have to get to the other ones. Like, it's the whole concept of the Wraithu is basically a female-driven kind of fic fantasy. And the idea that it's like, well, we've created this world written by a woman, but it's kind of for men now. Men control it now. How do we get women into this? It's not going to be easy, I'll tell you that. And I'm like, fuck you. So that's my least favorite thing about this. And John, let me ask you a question. Would you play this game?
Oh, good Lord, no. I cannot imagine a circumstance where that would ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, between the fact that there's nothing to do, the sexual politics of the game being very boneheaded, the combat system being unnecessarily faux realistic and cruel, there's just no good resonant thing to do here.
Yep, it's a bad game and a boring game and an offensive game.
Yep, it really hits all the marks.
It's just firing on all cylinders.
That's why this one's a perennial in the like worst role-playing games of all time list. Whenever you look at those lists on the internet, like, oh, the 10 top worst games, you get shit like Senzar and Fatal and so on. Wraithu's always floating around in there somewhere. And a lot of the time, I've read a million of those lists because obviously they're good for us for me to go find games to review. A lot of the time, the description of Wraithu is this book is weird because it's about people with flower penises and it's sexually very confused and gross. And when I was reading it, I kept being like, oh, you prudes, just get over it. And now I've read it and I'm like, nope, the prudes are the people who wrote this. And no, I wouldn't play this either.
Great. Good.
All right. Well,
I'm
I feel
glad
like
to
we
hear
a,
that.
A well-rounded, very long, very angry episode.
It's true. God, there's so much here. There was very little time for bits when there's so much garbage in this game.
But hey, if you want to hear more garbage about this game, well, good news, because we both already made characters in it, and we're going to go talk about the process of making those characters on our bonus content over on the Patreon.
That's right. If you go to patreon.com/systemmastery, support us at the bargain basement price of $1, why, you get our bonus content where we made characters.
Mm-hmm. That's us going through and really getting a little bit of a deeper dive into the engine by which characters are made in the game, which is often the thing people are most interested in anyway. When we forget to do it, it's the first thing we get yelled at. The second thing we get yelled at is not faking a combat. And the third thing we get yelled at is Elric, and fuck him.
Melniboné. There we go. Mm-hmm.
There it is. Yeah. Anyway, $1 at the Patreon. Stop on by patreon.com/systemmastery and join us. That unlocks two of these episodes a month. They're a good deal. There's plenty more levels to support us at as well, where that unlock even more shows. You can get like 9 bonus shows a month. It's dumb. It's crazy. We do too many shows.
True facts.
But that's the one we're definitely going to go record right away, the two of us, right after this, and you'll be able to get it pretty much immediately. So thank you so much for listening. We'll see you over on the Patreon. And you all have a really good one.